The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Greg McElroy, Cole Kublik, filling in for the great Paul Feinbaum. It is rivalry week. We are looking forward to taking your phone calls here in the final hour. As we sit here in Charlotte, about 500 miles, 400 miles away from our hometown of Birmingham.
Yep.
Where the Iron Bowl will kick in, say, 5 days.
Used to kick there.
Yeah, but the state. I'm talking
correct.
State.
Yeah, but used to kick in Birmingham.
Correct.
Yeah.
At the Gray Lady.
The Gray Lady. I played in the last one.
Wow, brag about it.
Well, we lost, so there's not much to brag about there, but thanks for bringing that part up.
You brought it up.
I brought up that I've actually played in the game. You brought up that I was actually trying to brag about something when we lost the game, but that was a special moment for me.
I didn't bring up the fact that you lost.
I grew up in Homewood, Alabama, just about 2 miles from Legion Field, and to me, the upper deck used to say football capital of the South, and that's exactly what that stadium was to me as a kid growing up. All the big games were there. Alabama played Tennessee there every year. The Iron Bowl was there every year. The SEC Championship game started there. So I saw a lot of massive football games take place in that stadium. So be able to play in the last one there, for me, that was really cool.
Very cool. And I do, part of me kind of wishes that it was still a neutral site, just because I know the history and have studied the history, and I felt like it was my responsibility as a quarterback at Alabama to learn about the rivalry. I thought that was important, read an awful lot about it, and just thought it was just so cool that the city and the entire state would converge on Birmingham, the biggest city in the state, and we would have a celebration of football. And I think that was a really special thing, but I love the idea now of going into the most hostile environment you can imagine and finding a way to get it done.
Those campuses are special.
So special.
When you and I, in 2000, we went back to Bryant-Denny Stadium. It was the first Iron Bowl there in over 100 years. So you can just imagine the Alabama fans, obviously Auburn fans, being able to go watch a game played there, and just how special that was, how cool that was. You obviously won at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Being able to go on the road and win that game is, it's indescribable. And it will be one of your best football moments, regardless of what you do the rest of the time.
I've told people this a couple times. When we went and played at Jordan-Hare, there's something wild about playing in Jordan-Hare. It's the only place where you can get stuck in traffic with a police escort. Seriously.
Strategy.
You cannot make this stuff up. 2009, police escort. We stayed in Montgomery. We're heading to Auburn. I don't know who was leading the escort. We got stuck in traffic. We were 45 minutes late getting to the stadium. Completely disrupted the rhythm of the game. Probably, what the heck? I blame you.
Probably a Lee County sheriff.
I think there. Using the Auburn University Police Department for our escort.
You know. Hey, it just means
gamesmanship.
More.
Gamesmanship. More. You got to do what you got to do.
Quickly, no dissertation. Your favorite Iron Bowl moment ever. What was it?
Without question, 2009. No doubt. And how about Justin Pluckett? We need Cole Kublik to put the Auburn helmet on.
Well, first off, we don't know what size this is, so if it's really small, then I'm in trouble. It says large. We'll give it a go. I told Greg this morning I would give him a segment with the helmet on, so yeah, there we go.
This is going to work great. All right, now let's get back to some favorite Iron Bowl moments. Mine was definitely in 2009, but I think I can make a pretty strong case for 2008 as well. I was actually the backup quarterback.
Humble brag.
The two times we beat Auburn when I was in school. I don't know. Is that, we went 2-3. All right. I'm not going to beat 2010. What I remember about that game was not as fun. But when I think back to 2008, we had not beaten Auburn. Tommy Tuberville had said, fear the thumb. And we had not beaten them in a really long time. I think it had been 6 years. It had been quite a while. And it was getting to the point where there was some serious frustration. Now, Auburn was gettable that year. We ended up running them up pretty good. I got put in the game at the very end of the game. No warm-up, about 2.5 minutes left. First down, handoff. Second down, little bootleg. Nothing. No big deal. Third down is 3rd and 6 at about the 35-yard line. We call double right Yiggy, which is the Y in like a little in-and-out motion. Double right Yiggy. Jet left Bama, or jet left Wyopo, excuse me. Jet left Wyopo. Bama's similar. That's just 3x1, 2x2. Mm. All right, Bama.
Sure.
Might still be in there.
That.
So, yeah, you got it?
Yeah.
Piece of cake. option route by the Y, Y-Opo. All right, that's the tight end. Outside receiver runs a mandatory outside release go ball down the right sideline. Well, Auburn just happened to be in press coverage one-on-one against Marquise Mays, our best deep threat. And it was 3rd and 6, and that's a green light special.
Not when you're up 38.
Up 29-0 at that time.
Same thing.
Up 29-0 at that time. I will admit the scoreboard was not a factor at that moment. All I know is I had press coverage against Nico Thorpe, and I'm going to take the top off. So I'm
you
going
to rip.
Marquise Mays over the top, touchdown, 36-0. Tommy Tuberville at Manning Camp. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, they host that camp in Thibodaux, Louisiana. He said, that was the throw that got me fired. Thanks a lot, you jerk. That was exactly what he said to me after the fact. That was my favorite. What's your favorite Iron Bowl memory?
Favorite Iron Bowl memory is going into my senior year, I was actually named, I had the honor of being the 6th-string center on our football team going into my senior year after I had started the 2 previous years. We had a little disagreement with the offensive line coach in the offseason. We didn't have 6 centers, by the way,
but
they invented a few others to be in front of me for 2 days when we started that. Started my first game, Iron Bowl 2000, in Tuscaloosa. Offensive line coach came in and told me in the locker room before the game.
Who's the line coach?
Hugh Knoll. He said, you're going to get start. You're going to go. And then Tuberville's walking by the locker. And you know, Tubbs pretty loose guy. He's fun. I said, Tubbs, you got pregame? You got speech? He's like, no, I'll call. Why? You got one? I said, you damn right I do. He said, all right, it's yours. You got it. So pregame speech in the locker room for 2000 Iron Bowl. Started my first game, played the whole game. We won 9-0. It was an offensive show for the ages. Yes. Damon Duval, 3 field goals. But, yeah, that's the best Iron Bowl memory for me.
That's cool. Nothing like it, man. There's nothing like it. And I've been a part of a lot of great rivalries, seen a lot of great rivalries, have called clean old-fashioned hate, have called South Carolina and Clemson, have called Florida State, have called a lot of really, really cool games. And for me, there was literally nothing that compared to the Iron Bowl. Just didn't. It's a special, special thing where football is second to religion. That's it. And it is something special. For any of you that haven't been, please make it a bucket list activity. You have to see it. You have to. Promise you will not be disappointed. You want to take a phone call?
Yeah, speaking of that, Dan.
You want to take the helmet off before
No, I told you I would do a segment.
Circulation.
Segment. It's a little tight
honestly,
around the...
Honestly, you shaved your head this morning, so like the glare off the helmet is actually a slight improvement from the glare off your head.
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. Dan in Pennsylvania, welcome into the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
What's up, brother?
Doing a great job filling in for Paul. Yeah, I'm in suburban Philadelphia. A huge LSU fan, usually travel down to an SEC game every year. I like to see LSU at home, and then the opposite year, I like to see him on the road somewhere. This year, just travel arrangements couldn't happen, so I drove out to West Virginia, called the West Virginia-Iowa State game. Great game, great atmosphere, but nothing. There is nothing like coming down to an SEC game.
Well, especially there, if you're talking about going to games in Baton Rouge, And if you can get to one at night, there's not much more of an entertaining venue than that one right there. That's a special place. And had a chance to play there at night 2 times in my career. It's obviously bigger, better, badder now than it was back then. Let's look all around the league. I mean, the Grove obviously is special. Had the Egg Bowl there last year. You think about – I mean, I think Columbia, South Carolina is one of the most underrated venues in all of college football. Brian Denny.
I didn't feel like it was that hard to play there.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of success.
0-1.
The Swamp is incredible. And what the interesting part about it is how some of these places have different meanings for us. The Swamp, as I've tried to relate to other people, was crazy for me because literally on the side of the bench that the offensive line was, part of the student section is 4 feet behind you. Hmm. Hey, there's a walkway, for those of you on television, about that wide that you can go through, and then there's the student section right there. And they would call us out by name every time we came off the field and just go into it. Athens, an amazing place to play, obviously. I played at Neyland the year after they won a national championship. Still to this day, the loudest stadium that I've ever heard. When that guy got on the PA and said it's football time in Tennessee, well, actually,
bonkers.
About 10 minutes later, We threw a pick six on the first play of the game. That was actually the loudest I've ever heard a stadium.
Yes. Pick six, first play.
First play.
Not going to get the quarterback warmed up.
Sorry, Jeff Klein. I didn't mean to do that to you on the show today, but yeah, it happened.
Wow.
He didn't have Deion Grant.
He doubled down by saying his name.
He turned through a little bubble. Deion Grant knew it was coming. He came down. House call, first play.
When you
play.
Throw a bubble to the house, it's just not going to be
done.
Your day.
Yeah, yeah
it's not
going to
be your day. Saw that. Not good. I would say this. I've been very fortunate, and Cole has as well. We've been a lot of really cool places, and I would encourage everybody that even if you're an SEC fan, go outside your footprint, check out other spots. I mean, one of the coolest places I've ever been, Washington State. Autzen Stadium in Oregon is amazing. I'll tell you another place that is super cool is Arizona State for a big game. Yeah. That place is rocking. Utah is unbelievable. BYU is super cool. I mean, you can't go wrong in a lot of different places, but what's cool are the different traditions that fan bases have.
Sure.
I say all that in setting this up. There is nothing like the passion of this footprint. There is nothing like the intensity on the field before the game. The best place that I've seen this year was actually Arkansas. Arkansas was welcoming in the Texas Longhorns, and that was electric at night that night in Reynolds Razorback Stadium. And I think that's what's cool about this place, is that it doesn't matter where you're at on the pecking order, because at that time, no one really knew what Arkansas was.
No.
At that time, Sam Pittman felt good about what he had, but they actually struggled against Rice the week before. We thought that Arkansas might be a 500 football team. Who knows? That night, though, that place, the electricity and the way the team rallied around and the way that fan base brought that team through, it was unlike anything I've seen the rest of the season. Just amazing.
When they get that woo pick suey going before the game,
that
and
place will
they
go.
Roll that big hog around there, it's a cool place.
That place will go. Arkansas, most underrated venue to me by far in the SEC.
All right, Chris Lowe, ESPN senior writer, broke the news of Dan Mullen's exit in Gainesville. Will join us next. We'll talk to him about multiple coaching vacancies across college football when we return on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Welcome back in. Paul Feinbaum Show. Cole Kublik, Greg McElroy filling in today. Monday of Rivalry Week. And it will obviously be a little bit different in Gainesville preparing for the Florida State Seminoles. And to discuss that situation a little bit further, Chris Lowe of ESPN joining us now. Chris, you had the news early on with Dan Mullen being let go there in Gainesville. We joked a little bit earlier in the show about, was Eli Drinkwitz's sort of may the force be with you? What pushed this over the edge? But in your opinion, what finally led to Scott Strickland making the decision to move on from Dan Mullen?
I do think it was a culmination of things. I don't think it was just one game. But I think over the last few weeks, it was pretty obvious to Scott Strickland that Dan had lost his football team. And when that happens, given the way they ended last season, some of the things that happened this season, some of the things that Dan had said over the years, the sort of the laissez-faire approach, at least publicly, to recruiting, I think was one of those things that Scott Strickland set out. As he sat down that morning, thought it out, and said, you know what, it's best we go in another direction, which is crazy because there's a team that was in the championship game last year, played Bama better than anybody, and what we know the standard is not at Florida, is just going to SEC championship games and going to BCS or New Year's Six games, because the Gators have done a lot of that in the last few years.
Chris, when you think about what's next for Florida, I can't help but look back to the last time they went through this, is the fact that they wanted Scott Frost. He wasn't interested. He took Nebraska. They wanted Chip Kelly. He wasn't interested. He took UCLA. Now they enter into the deep end of the pool on a carousel that is loaded with big-time job opportunities like Virginia Tech, USC, and, of course, LSU. Where is Florida in the pecking order relative to some of the teams that also have job openings?
I think outside LSU, Florida is the plum job. And some might say that Florida is as good, if not better, than LSU. I think LSU is one of the top four or five jobs in college football, but I think Florida's right there on the threshold. But you're right. There's so many other jobs out there, and you think about the domino effect and what Florida needs. We heard Scott Strickland's comments about what they were looking for. I have a hard time thinking it won't be an offensive guy at Florida. I think that's what that fan base wants. I think that you go back to the history when they've been at their best, it's almost always been an offensive guy, and I think that's the way they'll go this time.
And Chris, when you think about the next head coach at Florida and what it's going to take to be successful, maybe have more sustainability than the last few that Greg mentioned, how would you describe the personality of the coach that you believe Scott Strickland needs to hire that can last a little bit longer than the previous two have?
Two or three things jump right out at me. Someone who is absolutely tenacious on the recruiting trail, that wakes up every morning trying to figure out how they can bring in elite talent to Florida, and will hire a staff who has that same type of approach. I think the other thing is someone that can manage a program steady, has a presence about themselves, that can wear all the different hats. You know, someone that's not afraid to go toe-to-toe with Kirby Smart, with Nick Saban, on the field, on the recruiting trail. And someone who can develop and coach and relate and connect with everybody in the program. Coaches, players, donors, boosters, everybody that touches that University of Florida program. I think those three things, and that's asking a lot. There are not a lot of those guys out there. You know, there's one in Tuscaloosa. There's a guy down in Athens, Georgia, who's done it pretty well. Clemson, South Carolina. But there's not a lot of those guys that can wear all those different hats at a high level. And I know that's what Scott Strickland in Florida is looking for right now.
Chris, I hate to make assumptions in this case, but I listened to your words, and I know you're choosing your words carefully. I listened to the words that have been uttered by Scott Strickland when he went to the podium just the other day. I've listened to a lot of people, some on the record and some off. And the sense I get is that this decision was made about where the roster is right now relative to the top teams in college football and Dan's lack of willingness to really grind on the recruiting trail. How fair of an assumption is that?
I think it's very fair. I think that was probably as big a factor as any. And not that, you know, sometimes coaches get a bad rap, and maybe Dan did a little bit, that I hear people say he didn't care about recruiting. Well, sure he cared about recruiting. Was he as relentless as a head coach recruiting that guys like Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney were? No, I don't think he was. And I think you've sort of seen that over the last few years with some of the guys that they did get, elite talent, that their rivals around them did. So, no, I think that's a fair criticism, and I think that's a big reason that we're here where we are right now.
When you think about where this team is this year, the record speaks for itself, especially the conference record. Haven't had this many losses since 1990. But could this have been prevented by Dan Mullen outside of losing games? So take the record out of it. Everything else in how Dan Mullen has managed that program, could this have been prevented and he had maybe another year to right the ship in Gainesville?
I think there were some things that were said. Whatever you want to call it this offseason, the flirtation, the NFL talk, I don't think that helped. I think some of the, again, I use this word for the second time, the laissez-faire, some of the comments made about recruiting, sort of the shrug, all right, well, we'll recruit after the season. Some of the other things he said probably didn't help him, but you guys know as well as I do that those things, if you're winning championships and you're beating Georgia consistently and you're winning SEC titles and you're playing for national championships and winning those championships, those things never mean as much. They never matter as much. I still think it gets down to the fact that over the last, whatever, year and a half, 10, 12 games, that the way this team performed looked like, the Gators looked like down the stretch this year, a team that didn't really seem to be too enthused about playing football. And that always goes back to the head coach. And you know what the crazy thing is? You go back to that Alabama game when Florida plays really well and comes back and has a chance maybe to potentially tie that game or win it. I think if you talk to most Gator fans coming out of that game, they felt like, well, you know what? We didn't win the game, but we were right there. And now look where we are here 2 months later.
I hate to do this to you since you're my buddy and good friend for a lot of years, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Chris, if you don't mind. And if you really don't know, please, I mean, let me know, because I'm as curious as anything. If you had to predict and get out the crystal ball, who do you anticipate will be on the short list for both LSU and for Florida?
Oh, there's one name on both those lists. It's not a big secret. It's Billy Napier. Put it this way. Be good to be Billy Napier right now.
Well, right? I feel like Billy Napier wasn't even on the radar for LSU until Florida was interested. So is that accurate?
No, he was on the radar. I don't think he's 1A. Listen, 1A at LSU is the same guy it's been for seemingly 10 years, and that's Jimbo Fisher. I mean, and I'm not saying Jimbo's not being completely truthful when he says he's not going anywhere right now. I think he believes that, but I can tell you this, Scott Woodward at LSU is going to make him say no about 10 times before moving on. Where they move on from there, I think Napier would fit into that equation, but he checks a lot of the boxes at both places. He's an offensive guy. He's coached under Dabo Swinney. He's coached under Nick Saban, a tenacious recruiter who likes to recruit. He's been successful in recruiting, very focused, very smart, attention to detail, and a guy I don't think the stage is going to be too big for, even though as a head coach, he hasn't been in the SEC or a Power 5 school. So I think he's a guy at both places that figures in prominently. I'll tell you this, though, guys. If I'm Florida, you know, I do not scratch Lane Kiffin off the list. And I know a lot of people will say, well, they're not going to hire him. They're not going to go down that road. But when you look at what he's done in 2 years at Ole Miss, and he's got that team in a position to potentially win 10 games in a regular season for the first time ever, his offense, the way he's recruited, he certainly would be a guy I would call. And I think if you really want to swing big, why not Luke Fickell? Luke Fickell has done a tremendous job. I think he's one of the premier coaches in college football. I don't know if Luke's ever lived outside the state of Ohio more than about 2 days, but he is a guy that's going to be on a lot of lists. Here's the thing about Fickell, though. I think Cincinnati's going to make the playoff, and if they're in the playoff, I don't think he'll move.
Chris, great stuff. Always appreciate the time. Always great information. You're one of the best, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
You bet, guys. Take care.
Chris Lowe, senior writer for ESPN, ESPN.com. Some interesting names, interesting information that he throws out there. We want your reaction. Be a part of the show. We'll get to your calls next on SEC coaching situations, rivalry games as well. 855-242-7285. Back to hear from you next on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
right, welcome back in. Paul Feinbaum Show, Monday of Rivalry Week. Cole Kubik and Greg McElroy with you. Shared some of our favorite rivalry game memories earlier in the show, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear yours. We're going to go to Cotton in Alabama, wants to talk favorite Iron Bowl memories. Cotton, welcome into the show.
Thank you. Greg and Co, it's really been refreshing to hear from two players that actually played college football.
And, we appreciate you, man.
I've been a Tide Pride member since inception, but I also appreciate Auburn. I've got a cousin that was an offensive tackle for Auburn, and he's battling a form of cancer, and his name is Ronnie Jones, and I hope that the Auburn people will pray for him. And even though this is a rivalry week, and I have a lot of fun remembrances of you, Greg, and I just think it should be like another football game. Of course, it's special because it's a rivalry, but it's not life or death.
We appreciate the call, and obviously prayers out to your cousin, Mr. Jones, there. We will obviously all be thinking about him. So wish you the best. And that mutual respect, I've always said, in the Iron Bowl, because I felt like everybody was so much more focused on the task at hand.
Yeah.
That there weren't as many extracurriculars. There weren't as many personal fouls. There weren't as many fights. Because you knew if you were the guy that screwed it up, that was going to be a lot worse for you down the road than trying to be cool and punch somebody or get some kind of a cheap shot in. So
I got to be honest. Like I always felt amongst the players, and I know that this will sound like crazy, but we used to go to FCA camp, and we would all go away for a weekend, long weekend, a couple times a year, whatnot. Auburn was always there, and we had great friends on the other side. Yep. Like a lot of your buddies. Like I remember vividly playing in the Senior Bowl and Josh Bynes giving me a picture signed by him of him sacking me. You know, like it's more like out of respect than it is out of hatred. I know it's not like that for everybody, but it really is. Like you acknowledge that the Iron Bowl is a special and sacred thing for a player. It's special and sacred. At least it was for me. Maybe I can't speak for everybody. Maybe some people care about it more than others. For me, it was sacred. The Iron Bowl is the most important game I played in every year. No matter what, the game we circled, the game we loved. But in saying that, there was something that is about, like, your legacy and what is remembered about your career comes from Iron Bowls.
Yes.
And championship games. So you just want to play so well, and you want to give your team a great chance. And I just think there's just nothing quite like playing in a game like that with such on the line, knowing what it means to the people and those that, now that we live there, I feel like I even understand a little bit more because it's 365. But
a lot of paintings made on Iron Bowl moments. Logan in North Carolina, welcome into the show, Logan.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I love the quarter zips.
Oh, I appreciate you. Thank you, man.
For years. Yeah,
thank you.
Great look. Great look.
We're trendsetters.
Yeah, I just wanted, real quick, my favorite Iron Bowl as a kid was the Van Tiffin game. I mean, obviously, that was great. That's kind of when I first remember college football. And then, of course, our good friend Greg McElroy, I want to say thank you, sir, for the 2009 season. That was great. I had to work that day. I think it might have been a Black Friday. I was working retail, and you guys gave me a big scare there. And I remember watching Upchurch run that in. And everybody went crazy, so that was great. So, yeah, thanks, Greg. And I had a question for you guys. What's wrong with our defensive backs, Greg? Can it be fixed before the Georgia game?
Well, I appreciate the call, man, and thanks for taking us down memory lane. It's just there's so many great memories from Iron Bowls of yesteryear and so many that we could hit, gosh, on both sides of the equation that are memorable. I would say this. Treylon Burks came to play on Saturday.
Yes.
I mean, Treylon Burks is a monster.
He is a different dude,
yes.
No doubt about it.
And with what Alabama does defensively, if you're going to beat them, you got to win one-on-one matchups. Because they're more often than not, they're going to have one-on-one matchups, and their player's going to be better than your player. On Saturday night, Treylon Burks was better than anybody that Alabama had at corner. And that's not any disrespect to the corners at Alabama. It's not disrespectful to Josh Job. Not disrespectful, Jalen Armour-Davis, whoever it is.
He's done it to a lot of teams.
Treylon Burks does it to everybody.
Everyone. So,
he's amazing. So I think that's one where you tip your cap and just hope that you won't see a receiver that's that physically dominant on the perimeter the rest of the year.
The guy hunts hogs with a knife.
I didn't know that.
That's it. Just a knife.
Isn't that messed up, though, as a Razorback? You can't hunt hogs.
Yes, but still, he does it successfully often. So that's all you need to know about the young man. And that, when I heard that, the most impressive thing, I mean, I can see him make one-handed catches or catches in traffic, but him telling us stories about chasing down hogs in the woods
willingly,
early in the morning.
Willingly. Not like out of self-defense, like going after it.
On purpose. With a knife and taking them down.
The hogs are running away from him, scared of him.
I would too, by the way.
Oh my gosh, he's amazing, man. What a great performance. He made some money on Saturday, that's for sure.
Cat Daddy wants to chime in. Welcome to the show, Cat Daddy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Greg. How long did you have to stay in the shower to get that Clemson smell off of you after the ball game?
Come on, Cat. I actually had a wonderful time in Clemson, South Carolina. And they are very excited about next week with some of the momentum they've picked up in the last 5 weeks. Are you ready for them, Kat?
We're going to have to run the ball. I don't think we can beat them by sitting there trying to throw it 30, 35 times. So I hope we can get us a running game going. But I'm still a little worried about it, but I believe we can beat Clemson. They banged up as I ain't never seen no team banged up as bad as they is. So I think we're going to – I think the 14 points we got against us, I think we can cover that, at least.
I'll say this, Kat. I think this is the best opportunity that y'all have had to get them in a while.
Yes, absolutely. South Carolina will have to weather the storm on offense of what Brent Venables is going to do defensively, because he will attack. He's going to attack.
Gosh, yeah.
He's going to make Jason Brown make decisions. He's going to make that offensive line, the backs, the tight ends, all make decisions. And you and I talked about it last week going into that the Wake Forest game of – kind of how would he handle it? And we both stepped back and said, he's going to go after him. He's going to attack the mesh. He's going to attack. That's what he does. And he will do it to South Carolina this week. If you can weather that storm, maybe you can find a way to figure a few things out.
I think the other thing, too, you got to stop the run. And this is, I mean, they got gashed a little bit on Saturday night by Tank Bigsby and that Auburn offense, especially there in the first half. So I think you got to stop the run. Clemson right now, DJ Uiagalelei, not a very confident player, not a very accurate player. And he's very inconsistent. He's got a banged up right knee. He's got a hurt index finger. It's taped up. He can't throw the ball real true. And it's affecting the passing game an awful lot. Now, he made just enough throws on Saturday to win convincingly. He's going to probably be able to do the same thing again. But ultimately, that offense, it ran through Will Shipley and Kobe Pace. You got to stop the run if you're South Carolina and you want to have a chance on Saturday.
Chris in Florida wants to talk rivalry games. Chris, welcome in.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you guys doing this evening?
Great.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I wanted to just say, Cole, I enjoyed you guys Saturday night on the sideline at Ole Miss. Really added a lot to it. Really enjoyed that. And I hope you guys get to do that again.
Thank you. Ms. Nice will change up. We had fun with it.
And my favorite Iron Bowl moment is the guy that's sitting to your right. 2009, the drive. Greg, you got to talk about the drive. And I want to know, do you still remember the call, the play call that you guys called in the huddle on the pass to Roy Upchurch? Do you remember it?
Near I left, Peter passed right X corner.
So that's a yes.
Probably not going to forget that one.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What was the call of the first play of the drive?
We ran the ball, right?
I don't know. One asked about that.
15 plays. I don't know. There was so I think we ran it. I think we might have run it a second time, went short pass, and we hit Julio. And then basically it was like, all right, we're going to just find number 8 on this drive. And we're going to hit some shallow crosses.
Good idea.
We're going to get some meshes. And he's your safety blanket.
Is that McElwain calling those?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Throw it to 8 was always a good idea.
Safe.
I think no matter how far, how short, just get him the ball and let him work.
We had 15 plays on that drive. I think we were like 6 for 6 targeting Jones. 6 for 6 targeting Jones. 1 for 1 to Trent Richardson. 1 for 1 to Roy Upchurch.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.